This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 23rd, 2009, and you are listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I am Scott Long.
Hey, Scott, I think you need to have like a big AAA patch on your back.
Triple A patch.
You spend, you know what, either that or I'm going to call you like Dead Raccoon, because you spend so much time on the road. It's amazing. And I think it saves our business, too, because it keeps you away from me enough amount of time of the year that I don't want to wrap my fingers around your throat. But I'm very happy you're on the road, because that means, one, I don't have to be on the road, and two, you're always going to have these awesome stories. So I'm going to turn the show over to you, and then I'm going to go get something to drink, get something to eat. And when I get back, I'm sure you'll still be talking. But go ahead, let it rip, baby.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I feel bad. You all set me up here. And you're right. I always have these great stories. But this particular trip, a little bit of a snoozer.
No.
But, you know, the best thing is I'm in this this palatial timeshare unit here. Two bedrooms and a full kitchen with a fridge and microwave. And you know what? Because I have all this, you know, I can cook whatever I want here. So I went out to Walmart last night to stock up on provisions. My total bill, Chris, I'm charging to the company $14.36. I bought 15 donuts, a Walmart brand Triscuits, two liters of Pepsi, a tube of toothpaste because I forgot toothpaste, and a 12-pack of Natty Light. And that's what I'm using this great kitchen for.
Nothing but the best for the Ante Up brass. Timeshare and Walmart supplies. Who could ask for anything more?
Oh, see, I'm a bachelor regular. I totally miss my wife. I need somebody to cook for me. I'm down here in South Florida for the Florida Gaming Summit. And hold on, everyone, before you turn off the podcast. I promise you I will not bore you. We're going to make this a full topic like we did last year, but ain't going to happen. Just not enough there. But there was a couple things, Chris, that we could talk about. And they are applicable regardless of where you are. So it's not just Florida stuff.
Okay.
All right, so you ready?
Of course I'm ready, because I'm sitting over here at home waiting to get a drink while you talk.
All right, and when I hear you snoring, then I know I've gone past the the interesting part to the boring part. So, no, but you know, last year the mantra was level the playing field, and that's the same thing here. And you know, so for folks, our listeners that listen live in any area where there is Indian gaming, they're probably hearing the same argument in their state now. Or will, because of all this crazy stuff that has to happen based on federal law and Indians, and you know, so you know, the incumbent industries, whether it's paramutuals or commercial casinos, you know, they want to compete toe for toe with the Indians,
right?
But you know, it just can't happen the way federal law is. So I haven't come up with a solution. No one at the summit came up with a solution other than, you know, getting in our little Ante Up time machine and going back a couple hundred years and not kicking the Indians off their land so we didn't have to, you know, make good with casinos now. But It's just frustrating to hear people go back and forth and say the same stuff, and it's nothing's ever going to change.
No.
It's really frustrating. Though in the news desk today, we'll talk a little bit about something that happened after the summit that might be pushing the ball forward. But another thing that I thought was interesting is, we have Blackjack down here in Florida now at a couple of the Indian casinos. And just recently, the state is allowing some of the paramutuals that have slot machines down here to introduce video table games.
Yeah,
those little blackjack games for that, the busty little woman that's, would you like to hit? you don't have to tip them, which is great, and you can sit there and drool all over the video console with this busty woman. But there was some discussion on. These machines will mean, and I'm not going to get into that, but what I'm interested in is whether these machines or the introduction of table games, what that means for poker.
I have an answer.
Do you?
Oh, I have a theory or a thought.
You have a theory or a thought. Let's go with a theory.
All right, let's go with a theory. My theory is that the people who are playing poker now who are not very good are going to gravitate toward table games because it takes less skill. And there's more immediate return on your money or satisfaction of a blackjack table or something like that. So I think a lot of the fish, for lack of a better term, will swim toward the blackjack tables and leave poker, and poker's going to be that much tougher. That's what I think. I could be wrong, but at least here, I think, because they've had no other choice, whereas in Vegas or Atlantic City, they've had choices. So when you play with a poker player and they're not that good out there, that's because they've made the choice to play poker, whereas here, they had nothing else to do. Now they'll have something else to do, and I think it's going to hurt poker.
Yeah. No, I'm going to have to agree with you.
Damn!
Yeah, but I'll throw a little caveat in it. How's that?
Okay, good.
They had an analyst on this panel that said, hey, table games, obviously, generally speaking, bring in a higher income player into the casino. Versus just slots. So the fact that, and again, it's a very fine line. You're not going to get these heavy hitters coming in to play video blackjack now, probably. But you might.
Right.
And once they're in the casino, you don't know where they're going to go. They could go to the poker room and, after they make a big score on the video blackjack table and dump a bunch of money on a poker table. So
it's possible. It is possible.
And one other point that came out of the summit that is great for all of our listeners who have gone to Vegas recently or plan to go to Vegas, the financial analyst said this terrible economic condition in Las Vegas that's been going on for at least a year now will continue for at least another year or 2 years, Chris.
Oh, I know what that means.
That means you're right.
$6 a day at the IP, baby.
Lots of $6 night rooms at the IP. And cheap eats and cheap gaming for cheap asses like us.
Man, that is awesome.
Cheap all around. I mean, obviously it's not great for the companies out there, but we don't care about those. We're we're little fish. We need deals, right?
That's right. We need to have a reason to go out there to give them our money. So here's the reason. $6 a day and $3 steaks.
but the deals aren't just for the 6 hour stakes, 6 hour rooms. I mean, like the high end properties are the ones that are where the real value are. Now, I'm not saying that you and I aren't going to ever buck up $99 for a room at the Wynn, but $99 for room at the Wynn is a phenomenal deal.
Yeah.
Based on what they normally charge. So, if you're looking to take the little lady out there that demands no cockroaches in their beds. it's still a good deal out there. And the thing they mentioned is this new city center that's opening up. And I think you saw some of the construction, right?
Yeah.
And we were there. That's going to open up here and pretty soon. I mean, even this month, I think. And that's going to dump thousands of new hotel rooms on the market. And a market that already can't fill them. So, man.
You could literally live in Vegas if you wanted to in a hotel room for less than. You know.
I think we should put in a bid for the El Cortez. I think we could probably buy it.
I know Fasso would want to go in on that with us.
All right, well, moving on past the boring Florida gaming segment. I'm also down here because Calder Race Course is opening their new room on Friday. They're having a VIP event on Thursday. So, for our Florida listeners, it's one more room in the state. And I hear that they pumped some money into it, Chris.
Yeah, I hear it looks really nice, and I've seen some early photos of it, and I have to say I'm impressed. I'm hoping that they go a long way with it and do really well.
We'll see. We'll see. And then also, Chris, I did find a way to play some poker on this trip.
Okay.
It's not a given, as our listeners know, when you and I are on the road. we seem to find a way to not go play poker when we're in a poker room. But I played a little bit, and I found this immensely interesting, Chris. On Tuesday night, I got the, I don't know if it's the pleasure or the, I don't know what the adjective is, but I played in both Bar League poker and For Money poker in the same room, just two tables apart, right after each other.
Oh, that must have been, like, so surreal.
Very, very surreal. You know, one of the Bar Leagues down here that that we deal a lot with, All In Free Poker, they actually have worked out a deal with the Isle Casino down here, and they hold their final events in the Isle Casino, right?
Yeah.
And players don't have to buy in, though there's, you know, some, you know, they do an upfront dealer tip so the dealers don't get screwed. So it's a little bit of money, but for the most part, these are Bar League players playing in a casino environment, and you know, they invited me to sit in and play, and I made it to day two.
Ooh, cool.
It's impressive. I've proven that I can beat the snot out of 40 Bar League players. I'll put that on a t-shirt. so I came back on Tuesday for the second session, and I was short stacked, and boom, I was out like in forehand. So I will, my second shirt will be, I can beat the snot out of 45 Bar League players, but five other ones can beat the snot out of me. But and then after that, then I got into the normal $100 tournament that the casino offers its normal patrons, and wow, what a dichotomy between these two. You know, I had Bar League players that were pushing all in pre-flop with 13,000 in chips when the levels are 100, 200, and then going to, and they have to switch gears and go play the For Money where people were, let's say, making more sophisticated plays than that. It's probably safe to say, correct?
Wow. You know, Dad, that's like laying in bed and calling phone sex with a hooker laying right next to you. You know, you could be all suave and take chances in the phone sex and then hang up, but then when you turn to your right, you got to perform, baby. You know what I mean? That's unbelievable.
It was, you know, because I know a lot of our listeners probably play Bar Leagues and they also play for money, but you don't often get to play in that quickly together, and you really kind of see the differences like night and day. So,
man.
Unfortunately, I did not make any money in the night tournament. I was playing really well, and then, you know, I made one of those Bar League moves that pushed all in with pocket nines and got called by Ace King, Spike the King, and boom. I was home at the time, Sherry, eating Walmart Triscuits and drinking Natty Light, so... but I also played a little bit, a couple sit and goes, but then I got out sit and goes, and I played, they have an Omaha 8 game down here, which we don't always get going up in Tampa Bay. And, Chris, they should have had diamonds on all the seats by the end of this game, because the players were so tight that any carbon that was in their body would have had to crystallize into the Hope Diamond.
Oh, this is just the most disgusting image I have ever envisioned in my life.
And I got to tell you, I love Omaha High Low. It's my favorite game. I have a wide latitude of patience. But this particular game was worse than any Raz game I've ever played in my life. The frustration level. No raises ever pre-flop. And no raises anywhere else until maybe the river. Then somebody got crazy with you know, quads and decided to try to get an extra $4 out of someone. And you know, it's a game that is hard to beat the rake to begin with. It's a split pot game, which doesn't help. And the only way you can really make money in this game is to be in an action game and have some raising and take some chances and outplay players. But you know, if George Burns was sitting in this game, he would be a teenager. That's how old these players were. And I couldn't handle it. I'm glad they called me for a sit-and-go and got up out of there. I'm like, thanks, guys. You know.
And the funny thing is, too, is the people at that game are the children of the people in the stud game.
It's so true. So true.
Oh, my God. Well, I hope you have a good rest of your trip, and I hope you come back safe, because otherwise our company's dead. And I knew you'd come up with some good stuff, and I'm back with my drink, so we can move on if you want. Want to move on to our next item?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
You know, earlier this month, remember our event one winner from Apes, Rich Smoove, and we couldn't remember Rich Smoove.
Yes.
So he sends us an email from the Bronx, and of course we were talking Yankees, but that, we'll leave that for another time. And he says, "Hey, I'm watching the U.S. versus Italy and Poker After Dark, and I watched this whole week too because I wanted to see how the guys from America who were pretty tight would do against the Europeans, you know, the Italians." So, and he says his 6-year-old daughter, who really likes to play poker and watch it on TV with him and everything, she picked up a tell on Dario Minieri. And I was like, you know what? When I was watching, I thought to myself, there are a lot of tells with this guy. I just don't know what they are. But she figured them out. She's like, watch him, Daddy. Every time he raises, when he does the trick, which is what she meant for bluffing, she said, he smiles. And if he keeps doing it, they're going to put him all in. And she was right. Every time he did that little smirky thing, he had nothing.
Awesome. So we got a 6-year-old that's a little tell savant.
Man, I mean, that's what you need. You need to start them young. If they can start picking up tells at 6, the rest of it's going to be a cakewalk.
Well, I'll tell you right now, this will never happen. And I know Rich Smoove is going to do this because there is no parent in the world that wants his kids picking up on tells at 6. Because they're going to use that power against them. That's why this hasn't happened. My guess is, no offense, Rich Smoove, and you obviously have a prodigy here on your hands, but my guess is there's been a number of little girls and little boys over the course of history that have had this power, and their parents have snuffed it out of them.
Otherwise, like when she's 15, Daddy, can I stay out all night with my boyfriend? And he's going to be like, no. Oh, come on. I can see it. You're going to give in. And, all right. But just be home by 3, you know? Oh, man, that's hilarious. So, you know, congrats on having a, you know, phenom daughter there. And if she has any hints for us, let us know because we could use them. Scott could definitely use them when he's playing Bar League Poker.
Yeah, yeah. And nothing else, maybe she can replace Joe Navarro in her tells column. Or have a tell-off with Joe Navarro. That may be
fun. All right, well, this is going to be interesting because the Antiup News Desk is here in Tampa Bay, but you're in South Florida, so you've got like, it's like a bureau. It's like the Antiup News Desk Bureau. So what do you got cooking for us this week?
All right, in this one, I feel bad. We got a text message on this right after we recorded last week's show.
Yeah.
We try to be as timely as possible, but wow.
Yeah.
The absolute worst timing. But it's a big story. Mike Sexton, the longtime pro and co-host of the World Poker Tour, is the only inductee to the Poker Hall of Fame this year. Sexton will be inducted during a dinner on November 7th, leading up to the World Series of Poker main event resumption.
How disappointing is this for Tom McAvoy? I mean, they're never going to have this Binion Cup again, so he's never going to win that tournament again. You know, he's going around the country and doing boot camps and stuff and just trying to show that he can compete and play at a level that is deserving of it. He's written all these books. He's done all these things. He's even a part of the Deep Stacks University camp just to make some more exposure and do well, and he still doesn't get voted in.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, I tell you, I mean, he was one of them that I thought was deserving, but that was a pretty impressive slate of nominees this year.
Sure, Harrington, for Greenstein, all those guys, absolutely.
And for only one guy to get picked, I mean,
it's just ridiculous. You know,
it seems ridiculous, but also, I mean, there's a weird part of me that says, you know, these voters have taken it kind of seriously, too, that they're not just,
yeah,
you know, putting a check mark next to everybody's name, because you can make a case for everybody on that list, I think, easily.
Even Tom Dwan.
Well, maybe not him, but you can make a case for all those players. So, you know, if you have loose voters, you know, then it kind of dilutes the value of it, I guess. So,
no, I agree.
I think they probably were a little too tight. I mean, this was probably the voting this year was probably done by my friends at the Omaha game at the Isle. but yeah, I don't know. It is what it is. But shocking, I would say.
I mean, they're probably going to get in eventually anyway, but good God, one person and with the credentials of the other, at least Harrington and whatever. Hey, you know what? You're down there at this compact sort of gaming thing. You read the next one.
I figured you were going to try this. All right, just days after Florida Governor Charlie Crist and Senate President Jeff Atwater called for a special session of the state legislature, House Speaker Larry Crudel told the head of the National Indian Gaming Commission talks between the legislature and the Seminole tribe at an impasse, Chris.
Yes.
And the federal government needs to shut down tribal bank games or fine them here in Florida. So if you're outside of Florida, you probably don't understand how big this is, but there's a big fight going on, brewing down here.
Yeah.
And this is moving the ball forward. I was talking to a TV reporter a little bit ago, and the analogy I used is what's going on now is a game of chicken with the cars not moving. Can you imagine that? They're like, you know, two cars in a parking lot revving their engines, but neither one of them is going to swerve because they're not going. And I think what's happening today is the Florida House put the car in drive and is hurtling towards the other one. So we'll have a resolution here pretty soon. Yeah. Now, what it means, I don't know. But at least the cars are moving finally.
All right, well, as our listeners can probably deduce, we are on Skype today, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't call the hotline. 813-448-1120. We still have access to the clips. Call and leave one, and we use it, and we'll give you something really cool. And this week we have a Hoosier, Scott from Indiana. He has a whole bunch of topics he wants to talk about.
Hey, Chris and Scott. This is Scott from Indiana. Listening to your podcast, I'll give you guys a call. I was listening to you guys were talking about the guy from Santa Cruz or something like that that was in Vegas and saw the taping of Let's Make a Deal, whatever show it was, of Wayne Brady. The show is being shot in Vegas. Wayne Brady has actually canceled his shows at the Venetian while he is doing that show, and he is hosting it. But the thing that is funny about this, the same guy is calling a lot of other podcasts. You guys aren't the only one he's calling to tell everybody this, too. So I do know he's called 500 by Midnight and a few other ones. So I think he's just calling around putting his name out everywhere. But either way. No, and I'm still haven't listened to your guys' whole podcast, but I know you guys haven't spoke yet about the, I believe it was a French girl that was in the World Series that the dealer took her cards. So I wonder what you guys thought about that, if you guys can talk about that on your podcast.
All right, well, I'm going to start with the first one because I know the second one you can handle better.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, I think it's all right, Chris, that we share our listeners with other podcasts. I mean,
absolutely.
They know that ours is the best, so that's all that really matters to us. And you don't know we're the best if you don't listen to the other ones and know how crappy they are, right?
Exactly.
So Dave is doing a service for us, I think.
You think Dave hung out with the 500 by Midnight guys? You think he's hanging out with Joe Seabock at Poker Road? I don't think so.
Nope. He's just teasing him.
He's just teasing him. He's hanging out with you, man. We're available to the public. You know, he brought up also, he was surprised we didn't talk about this, the French woman in the main event, pretty deep in the main event, loses her cards in the muck when she has pocket aces and only had to make a min raise because she had said all in, but the dealer grabs her cards by accident, and ultimately he was saying, you know, it's not right or whatever, but ultimately it is your responsibility to protect your cards in that kind of environment, and I felt terrible for her, but let me tell you, pure class. She was upset, clearly, but pure class, and when she finally got knocked out, she just walked away without a word, wasn't steaming at anybody, wasn't yelling at anybody, even like smiled and with a chagrin, you know, and sort of tucked in her chair and walked away. Pure class, man, and I felt so bad for her. Not that it would have made really that big of a difference, because she still only had, like say, 10 big blinds on her. But you never know, you know. I felt terrible for her.
All right, well, you know, I didn't see this, and people were talking about it at the table down here a couple nights ago, and the guy that was telling the story was obviously telling it incorrect, because there's no way how he said it went down. So do me a favor, and our listeners who didn't see it, and just briefly explain what happened here.
Okay, well, J.C. Tran, I think, was at the table, and he had raised, and someone else, I think, may have called, okay? But she said all in and shoved her chips in, okay?
Okay.
Now, when they went back to J.C. Tran to do his little thing or whatever, the dealer grabbed her cards somehow and slid them into the muck. So she's like, where are my cards? And the dealer's like, oh, floor. I'm like, oh, great. Well, they call the floor over, and the floor's like, you know, what happened? And so they said, she's all in, and they mucked her cards. And so the floor said, all right, well, what did you have? And she went over to him and whispered in his ear what she had, which was pocket aces, and she told him what aces they were. And so they looked at the muck and could see two cards sticking out and said, all right, well, we think these might be your cards. Let me look at them, and if they're your cards, we'll give them back to you.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So he looked at them, and it wasn't what she said she had, and that was it. That was the end of it. They weren't going to go through the entire muck looking for these cards because she could have just guessed. Not that she was doing that, because I think everyone can sincerely see that she was not, you know, crazy or whatever. So what I thought would have been weird is if J.C. Trin had called an all-in, then her cards aren't there. You can't give him the pot because you have to see for collusion or whatever. You know, you have to see the cards. So, oh, my God, what would have happened if somebody had called her? So she ended up losing the minimum that she could have lost with a raise. It was like a min raise. And then, I don't know if it was Tran or someone else. I think it was somebody else in the hand because Tran folded. And the other guy who had called or had re-raised Tran and she shoved actually ended up getting the money without even showing his cards. And it was absolutely brutal. But she handled it with class. She was clearly upset, obviously. But when she actually got knocked out and everything, she was... It could have been a lot worse. She could have had all her chips in and they could have called and, like I said, not... And gone out.
Yeah,
like
I was gonna say. All right, so she had more chips than.
She didn't
give her chips back. I guess is what I'm saying.
Right. She was only. They gave her chips back, but not all of her chips, because she was only responsible for a min raise at that point, since they can't put her all in without her cards or something to that effect, and she got some of her chips
weird.
Back.
You know, here's the thing. Obviously, we know she has pocket aces because it was on TV, right?
Yeah.
So you know, I wonder at some point if they're going to get to this point. You know, they always talk about the rules at the end of the year, anyhow. I wonder if. You know, they're going to get some kind of instant replay like baseball or football or something. You know, if you got the technologies there, maybe it's worth talking about.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, this was an outside table, so we couldn't see the whole cards.
Oh, okay. All
right. Yeah, it was an outside table that they went to and saw the incident. But I agree.
All right, so we don't know for sure that she had pocket aces.
No,
she just said she did.
Right, exactly. We don't know for certain.
Oh, okay, all right. Completely different. Yeah. Completely different. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, Scott, well, we thank you for calling, and we will send you a set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from greatpokerhands.com if you email us your address at podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
Sweet.
And we got a mailbag this week, and I know you're going to have fun with this one because you always have fun with this kind of stuff. comes from Terry Rosenbaum, and he writes in and he says, when you're playing a tournament and there are no re-entries and the tournament starts at 7 p.m. and people show up late, the house lets them in through the first level. Is that fair or even right? Or does each house make up their own rules as far as time to enter a tournament and time to cut them off? It is very disheartening to a player who comes early or on time. All right, Chris, what do you say?
Well, I do believe that rooms have to advertise this or should advertise this rule, whether it's on their bulletin boards or part of the, like if they're going to put the in an anti-up ad, for instance, you know, entries allowed through first level or whatever. Then if you know about it and you know the house allows it and you're dead set against it, then you have the choice of not entering it. I don't mind. I think even the Apes events, right? Our Apes events allow re-entry into or not re-entry, but entry up until
late
the first.
Entry.
Yeah. So I'm not against it because, one, you know about it, so you're playing with those parameters. I mean, just like you're playing with the fact that if you're playing deuce to seven, you know, the best hand in deuce to seven is not a world flush, you know what I mean? It's part of the rules. So part of the rules here is that they're allowing people in. And I like it because what if you get stuck in traffic, you know, and you want to play in that tournament and you're 1 minute late? You know, what happens then? So, you know, there may be a way that you can get them to buy you in or whatever on the phone or something, but not everybody has that luxury. So I don't mind it as much. So I understand where he's coming from and why he doesn't like the idea, but... I don't have a problem with it, and I don't think it's against any rules. And they should, I think they should make it known to their players that this is the way they do their tournaments or this specific tournament. But I don't have a problem with it at all, to be honest.
Yeah, and most rooms I've been in, they actually advertise it because it's a perk, I think. I mean, to let people know, hey, if you get late, we'll still get you in. Now, I understand what he's saying. I mean, it's kind of rough because I'm kind of a punctual person with tournaments. And I'm there, and I want my hand. So I guess you can be upset that if you made the effort to haul ass over there and get there on time, that it's unfortunate that some bumbling idiot comes in 20 minutes later and could still play. But here's the thing. It helps the prize pool. That's why rooms do it.
Yeah.
You know, the more people in the tournament, the bigger the prize pool. So I think it's something that should be embraced. I mean, you got to cut it off at some point. And that could be a source of argument, you know, if they're letting people re-enter, or I mean, not re-enter, but enter late. like 3 hours in, that's probably ridiculous. But
well, here's another scenario too. Let's say you're playing with the Geritol gang at the Omaha table, playing cash games, and then the table breaks, and you missed the tournament. You weren't going to play in the tournament, but there's nothing else for you to do because you're an Omaha player or a No Limit tournament player, and you don't want to play cash games. The tournament breaks 2 minutes after the start of that tournament. Why wouldn't you be given the chance to go play in that tournament? You know, because it's not your fault your table broke, and it's not your fault you don't play No Limit cash games. You only play Omaha or No Limit Hold'em tournaments. So there's another reason to have it in case something like that happens where a table breaks and you want to play in a tournament now and it's too late. You know, so I agree with it. I think that it's not a bad thing. And it's only for one level, you know.
Or sometimes it's more. It depends on the house. But, yeah, but usually, yeah, it's not usually not very long.
Right. Yeah, or first usually hour. The first hour is what I meant to say.
Yeah, first hour. Right.
So, but we'll
make all right, Terry. Well,
yeah, I was gonna say we'll make him feel a little better. We're gonna give him some.
We will, Terry. We'll send you a hat from Twiff.com, and you can wear that in the poker room, and people will point out, "Hey, that's the guy that doesn't like us to enter late." We'll make you a celebrity. How's that? All right, Terry. We'll send us your address to podcast@danny@magazine.com, and we'll get that wonderful prize out to you.
Well, last week, part 15 of the ride-along with Senior Colombo, the blinds were 600, 1200 with 150 ante, and we basically had the same short stack with one other person, 25,000 chips. There was one limper, and we were in late position with the Cosenza, the ace of spades, 10 of clubs. So we decided to raise to 6,600, which is 3x. So the limper calls, and we see a flop of king of hearts, three of diamonds, eight of spades, and the limper checks to us. Scott, what do you do?
All right. I say we have two options here, and both of them are valid, and it all is entirely based on what we know about our opponent. Now, we don't know much from what Colombo has told us, but Colombo probably has an idea. And what I would say is if we know our opponent to be tight or predictable, I'm going to make my standard C bet here, and I'm going to say it's about 5K or so, and that leaves me with enough chips if I get raised, if I can't get him to fold, and if he doesn't have a king, and on this board, I think that's really all we're worried about. He's going to fold, and we'll pick up the pot. Now, but if we're up against a crafty player here, I might check behind and keep the pot kind of small, and the intention of trying to take it down on turn, you know, by raising what I assume will be a, when he bets out on us.
Like a bluff bet.
Yeah, so that's what I'm going to say. I mean, it depends on the player.
Well, I have to say that I'm a little partial here to the Cosenza hand for unknown reasons, and I love to go out with it. So I have this uncontrollable urge to shove. Not sure why, but that's what I'm doing. I don't think I have another play here. It just seems like that's the play to make, represent it, and shove.
All right, now here's the interesting thing. We'll talk about the forum, too, because they were all in agreement that we need to shove here. And they're also in agreement that we raised too much pre-flop. I mean, it was about 5x, probably.
Yeah, I had said 3x before, but I meant to say 5x.
Probably about 5x. Yeah. So they think that we raised too much pre-flop, but by doing that, we left ourselves no other option that we're going to bet we have to push all in. Now, I got to say, I disagree with that. I think we have enough chips here that we don't need to go crazy. Now, I'm not saying it's not a bad idea to shove, and it could work, but I don't think we're forced to shove here.
Okay.
I mean, we bet 6,000, we have 19,000 left. I mean, obviously, it's not great, but blinds are only 1,200.
Okay. I'm not going to argue with you because I mean, I can see both sides.
Argue with me.
Well, my side of it is that, you know, I'm not going to sit here and calculate the M, but even though you have 10 big blinds, you still have 150, so you have another 1150 that you have to put up for every rotation. So you're looking at really seven rotations, maybe eight. And at this point, he checked to us. He's weak. We represent his strength. And, yeah, maybe we can. Maybe you said maybe we can bet, like, 5,000 or 6,000 here, but that would seem kind of fishy to me because it's not two-thirds of the pot. It's less than half. So you're betting less than half of the pot. It just seems like – but and I understand your pot control angle too, but to me it just seems like if you should bet pot here or two-thirds, three-quarters of the pot, and that much to me is so much of our stack that we might as well just shove and hope this guy lays it down. But you're right. I mean, I can see your side of it. But for the sake of argument in the show, I'm shoving with it here. But I'm very interested in seeing what he does because he's generally pretty tight. So
yeah, it really doesn't matter what we say or you say or what the forum says. It all matters what Columbo says. So.
Yeah, it's kind of like Laden Thinks. Remember that game, Laden Thinks, that they play on TV now? Or you have no idea what I'm talking about, do you?
Not at all.
We'll save that for another show. We'll save that for another show because that's a very interesting prop bet game they play now that is Fondiari and Phil Locke invented. But we'll move on now. Let's hear the result and then see what happens in the rest of part 16.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and welcome to episode 16 of Ride Along with Columbo. If you recall, I raised it up with Ace-10 after a limper came into the pot. We missed the flop, but I had already decided to play this hand ABC and follow up all but the most painful flops with a standard C-bet.
Sometimes you do things just to see what happens. My wife loves to try new things. I'm not always thrilled with what she tries, but...
In this case, the flop is really great for me, since if he did not have a king, I don't think he can call here with an 8 or a 3. I can c-bet and represent a king easily, and when I make the c-bet a 7,200, the hand is over. It continues to be a tough table, and even stealing is just keeping me alive. The level went up to 800, 1,600, 200, but I still only have 27K in chips. In three rotations, I have only managed to toe the line, but there are less than 70 players left on the bright side. As is often the case in the final stages of tournaments, players are really tightening up and being careful of what they play and how they play it. In this hand, it folds all the way around to me on the button, and I make a raise to 4,000 with ace of spades, three of spades. A button raise with an ace. But to be honest, I'm going to make this raise with any two cards. The small blind folds, but the big blind raises 23-5 and is all in. I got 15 seconds to think about it. The stakes are getting higher, and the decision's harder. Do I want to call or fold?
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
I have been waiting for this event, Scott, this Apes event, for a long time, and... It's because, you know, when we played on the boat and we had our team championship, I really wanted to play heads up, and I got sucked out on so bad by this one guy. It was the most ridiculous suck out ever. I was so hungry to play a heads up match against somebody other than my wife that, you know, I just wanted to play it so bad, and I lost my opportunity that I've been dying since then to play this thing. So I'm really looking forward to the free roll on Wednesday and, of course, the Apes event on November 11th. So how about you? Do you like playing heads up?
I do like playing heads up, and I too am. This is the most exciting event on our calendar for Apes this year, I think. And we'll pause to let everybody know to go to andy@magazine.com/AIPS and get all the information. But we haven't done a heads up one before, so this is new.
Yes.
And it's really cool because it's, you know, it's a complicated kind of thing, you know, because you got brackets involved and stuff like that. But I am really excited. Obviously, the free roll will be. Let's say interesting.
Yes.
Considering how free rolls have gone already, yeah. but certainly the Apes event is going to be a lot of fun to play heads up against the listeners. So.
Well, I'm going to start us off, but first I have to get my high school Powder Puff cheerleading outfit on.
Oh my! Nobody wants to see that.
Let me put my wig on here and.
Okay. All right.
My first tip.
Wow.
My first tip is.
Wow.
Be aggressive. Be aggressive. Put pressure on your opponent, especially when you have the button. Make that person have a hand to call your raise. And generally, you know, if you're looking for action, make your raise 2.5x because it's just heads up, and that's enough to get them interested and then take them down.
All right. So 2, 4, 6, 8. Who do I appreciate? Cosenza, Cosenza. Go Ace-10. How's that?
That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. You should see the skirt I'm wearing here, too. I didn't even know that you were going to be doing that, but I just happened, you know, I travel with a skirt
Hey, buddy, yeah. I just said I was putting on a wig. I never said anything about female clothing.
All right, well, that was a very good tip. My first one is be consistent. And I write in all caps a lot less information in heads-up play than full table play. So don't give your opponent any more information than is necessary. Raise for the same amount from the small or big blind and c-bet for a consistent amount. Because I just want to keep my opponent guessing. Now, you could do that in a full game, and it's a little tough because you got multiple players, and it's not always easy to do that. But heads up, you could be extremely consistent, and if you're consistent, it doesn't give your opponent anywhere to go. They're going to have to guess.
And, you know, we could easily give alternative tips to all of our own tips here. These are just our tips. I do remember Harrington talking about if you were in the small blind, if you were in the big blind and you had a hand that you really didn't want any action, he would say something like 5x to take it down there and be happy to take it down there. Mm-hmm. And it was weird. He varied his raises, which was really shocking to me. I never thought he would say that, but I think it's the second book he wrote, The End Game, he mentions that in the heads-up play portion about if you're in the big blind and you got a small pair or something, I don't know what it was, but he said, you know, make it 5x or something and take it down. Be happy to take it down now. So it's real interesting to see what people think like.
Well, here's the thing. Dan Harrington is a world-class player. I'm just some schmuck that has a podcast. So, and no offense to our listeners, but they're probably closer to my skill level than they are Dan Harrington. So,
and you got a magazine, too. You know, you got a little more clout.
Oh, That's true. it's great. I mean, heads up. There's so many different things going on. But, I just think for the casual player, keeping it consistent and making your player guess is the way to go.
Yep. And my second tip, then, is don't be afraid to trap. You know, since I'm telling people be aggressive, that means a lot of people are going to be listening to the show, and if they never played heads up, they're going to be aggressive. So if you have a huge hand, maybe just calling pre-flop and springing that trap later will pay off big time, especially if you just limp, you know, off the button with aces. You know, they're never going to put you on that hand. So just don't be afraid to have a trap as well while you're there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Trapping is great in heads up because, you know, again, I mean, the default for everyone, and it's a good default, is that your opponent has nothing.
Yes.
You know, ops are going to miss a high percentage of the time. So, I mean, if you hit big and you can get players to fall into that, beautiful.
Yep.
All right, my second one, be patient. Take the first 10 hands or so to get a feel for how your opponent play. If he's aggressive, is she crafty? I think you can learn a lot about your opponent, Chris, quickly in heads up. It's not like at a ring table when you've got, you know, 9 players that you're trying to figure out. I mean, you've got 1 player to learn. So it's kind of like the football teams that kind of like script their first 10 plays.
Yeah.
I kind of like just sitting back and finding out, particularly if it's a player I don't have any information on, I like to sit back and see how he or she is going to play it. And rather than before I jump into my game and I know how it's going to work against that player.
Sure. How many times have you been like in a sit and go, and then when you get heads up against somebody, they never adjust. They keep playing as if they were playing in a full ring game, and you sit there, and after a couple of hands, you instantly know, oh my God, this person is not adjusting. I'm going to be able to run over this player. You know, it doesn't take long to find out because you're playing so many hands with them. Even something as short as 10 hands, it only takes a few minutes. So absolutely, just feel them out, read them out. All right, my final tip is any pocket pair is a big hand. You're probably going to want to push the action with pocket pairs because in all likelihood, you are ahead pre-flop, and you want to get your money in good. And I'm not saying shove, but you can be confident that a raise is worth it here because you likely have the best hand, and then play accordingly.
Except online, where you almost always run into another pair.
I didn't say that.
Because of the unramped number generator.
I did not say that.
No, you're right. No, you're right. Like we said, you know, missing flops happens a high percentage of the time in this game, so pocket pair, you're not missing the flop. You know, you've got something. So I think you're right. I mean, that's a big hand, and push it. Push it.
And if
push it, feel good.
If Poker Stars is listening, I did not say that, Scott did. So make sure that I get my money.
All right, my final tip. Be annoying, and Chris, you can just quit listening now because you're already annoying. So,
yes.
You have to find out how to be knowing you already have done that. But be annoying. Heads up is great because it's just you and her. So you notice I'm switching the pronouns around.
Yes, yes.
You're able to play a wide range of styles, so pick a style that combats your opponent's style If you can make him, say no, now it's him now. If you can make him uncomfortable, he's eventually going to make a bad move, just like Iceman in Top Gun. I love that line.
Hey, are we playing like a hermaphrodite or something? What is with this he and her and what are you doing?
I don't know. I'm just trying to, anyway, it's heads up. I'm just trying to spread it out a little bit. But you know, I got back to the hotel last night and Top Gun was on. I'm like, awesome. I love that. Why do they call him Iceman? Because he's got, you know, ice through his veins and just messes with, do you make a mistake?
Oh, that's my God.
And then heads up, you know. Yeah, I love, I have the tough time, honestly, adjusting my style in a full tournament. I like to play my game. But heads up, I have no problem if somebody's hyper-aggressive, playing tight, and if they're tight, playing hyper-aggressive. I mean, I think it's much easier to switch your style heads up.
Oh, and, yeah, absolutely. Because you only have to have one style to figure out. So it's definitely better.
So, yeah, I think if you could frustrate your player by playing opposite of them, then you really are frustrating them and have a good opportunity to take them down.
And, of course, with all this, well, you and I will likely go out in the first round anyway. But, you know.
Exactly. We'll end up playing each other, probably. That's
oh, that happen. Would suck. Oh, man.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up.
All right, Chris, we put out the word that we needed hands of the week, and we got flooded with them. So it'll be at least 2 more weeks before I put out that call again. We've got plenty of good no-limit hands, so we'll bring our good friend Lee Childs back here pretty soon to analyze. But today it's just going to be us.
Cool.
And this comes from a longtime listener, Chris Colum, Aquaman we call him.
Yeah, Aquaman, playing the home game with him up in Connecticut.
Yep. And he's out in California now. I think he's out in San Diego. So I hope he's having fun out there. And he's playing a pot limit ha tournament for $550 online. And this is the Omaha section of it. And we're early on. It's 25-50 blinds. It's eight-handed. And going to say, hey, he's not really great at Omaha, but let's see what we think about his play here.
Okay.
All right, well, chip stacks are all over the place. Short stack is undergun at 605. Aquaman here is pretty close to the chip leader at the table with 4,000. There is one guy with more than that. Everybody else is a little bit less. All right, Aqua is under the gun, plus one, and under the gun folds, and he looks down at king of hearts, eight of clubs, jack of diamonds, nine of diamonds.
Okay, if it was Omaha A, it'd be in the muck already, but Omaha High, yeah, I mean, you know, in tendency, too, if people want to play pot limit games like this, tend to, you know, limp or min-raise just to build a pot and not really get crazy raising at this level, especially if it's a $5 tournament like this, so I don't have a problem calling.
Yeah, you know, a couple of things here, I think. Omaha, obviously, position is huge. So if you're going to play a hand like this, I'd rather be in position, and obviously we're not in position here. Right. But like you said, it's also 25-50 right now, and we've got 4,000. And so if we can flop something and get in cheap, then great. And this is a hand that's got two straight possibilities there, too,
yeah.
Which is what I think is, you know, you always got to remember in Omaha High that you're really your best thing is to play for straights.
Yeah.
There's so many different cards, so the fact that we have a couple straight draw possibilities here, I'm willing to chuck in 50 here and hope it doesn't get raised and get lucky.
Absolutely. I mean, if a queen and a 10 came on the flop, you would just pee your pants. I mean, it's like the greatest flop ever. So you got an ultimate wrap kind of hand here for something like that. So I would definitely peel off a flop with 50 bucks or 50 units.
Yeah, and of course, if this was farther in the tournament, then obviously we would not be doing that. But right, 50 right. bucks! All right. So we're all in agreement, including Aquaman. He throws the grant in the middle of the table, and the middle position plus two, so two players after him, bets 100. So min raise.
Yeah, whatever.
All right, with the button calls, small blind calls, and it gets back to us. And I think we don't need to waste any time here. We're gonna throw another grant in there, make it an even bend.
Yeah.
And grumble under our mouth that somebody actually. been raised. All right, so that's what we do, and we see a flop of Ace of Diamonds, King of Spades, Eight of Diamonds, four players, pot is 450, small blind checks, it is to us.
You know, this is interesting because although we have what appears to be bottom two pair, right? I guess the king and the eight. So, and then we have a
that
diamond
disappears,
draw.
That is what it is.
but none of this, none of these are like nut draws. You know what I mean? Okay, right. You got two pair, but if somebody entered the pot, they probably have, they could have an ace and eight or an ace king. And then the flush draw, you only have like the third best flush draw. So
right.
It's real precarious because there's so many people in the pot. If it was heads up, I would love my hand. But right now, I'm not really, it's not that sexy to me.
Yeah, I got to tell you, this is the type of hand that most Omaha players will go broke with. Bottom two pairs, always trouble in Omaha.
Yeah.
Particularly with an ace on board because you know people play aces. More so in Omaha 8, but definitely in Omaha as well, too. And you're right, your draws aren't nuts, and this is a game of nuts. So this is one of those weird things where, you know, people would fold. I mean, obviously you're not going to fold without a bet here, but if you fold and tell somebody I had two pair, you'd definitely have people at the table go, what, are you insane? And then you can write back, no, I'm not. I'm actually playing solid Omaha.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem checking here and controlling the pot and, you know, I mean, the most somebody could bet is 450, which at that point I may call or I may make a decision to even actually fold. But I have a feeling that, you know, if I check, I can probably control the size of the pot a little bit, at least to see the turn, see what goes on.
Yeah, I'm going to check too, and I'm going to check with the intention. Even if it's a pot size bet, I think that's going to be too much for me to call, but I might entertain something a little smaller.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. So Aquaman does the same thing. He checks. Checks around the button who bets 100. Small blind gets out of the way, and it's back to us. So it's 100 into a 450 pot.
Yeah, that I have to call. It's 4.5 to 1 on my money. Right, it's 550, 400, so it's 5.5 to 1, I guess. So yeah, I'm going to have to call and then just see if I boat up or if like a queen of diamonds comes, you know, or something. I'll feel pretty good about my hand. So I'm going to call that.
Yeah, not knowing what the button has, I'm going to say this is a good bet by the button because it's low enough that it's going to suck me in here. And if I miss the button, I'm going to get a little bit more out of me. I mean, 100, I'll take a chance here this early. But I'm going to be real careful on the turn.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So we're all in agreement, too. And Aquaman calls. The third player calls as well, too. So we've got three players going to the turn with 750 in the pot. And the turn, Chris, is the three of spades. That makes the board ace of diamonds, king of spades, eight of diamonds, three of spades.
Man, that is a deer in headlights blank look there. There's nothing good about that card at all for us. And if anything, it gives someone else another spade draw. So that's a terrible card for us. Terrible.
Yeah, I don't know about terrible, but it's not a good card. But I can't imagine three is going to help anyone unless they were, you know, if they had an ace and they had a three in their hand, but that doesn't make sense. But really, what we wanted to see here is a card that helped us.
Yeah, that didn't help
and
at all.
We didn't get that. And then, obviously, as you said, now we've got two flush draws out there that are precarious. So I'm going to go on the limb and say you're going to check.
Yeah, I obviously, I'm not going to get aggressive here, so I'm definitely checking.
All right, good. Again, we're all in agreement. We'll find a way to disagree at some point here. Aquaman checks. Next player check the button, who obviously bet the 100 last time, bets 150 into the pot now.
Oh, my God. You have to call again. Because even if you call and lose here, you still have, like, 3,800 or 3,700. That's still plenty of chips at this point. So, you know, you could see a magical queen of diamonds on the river or something like that. And although I wouldn't be too ecstatic with that hand. But, yeah, I'm going to call again.
Well, I tell you, this is rough here because you're right. It's 150. It's almost like a weak bet on the button. It's either a weak bet or a really in bet. And I think I'd be willing to get reeled in, but I don't know what I want to see on the river. I don't know what.
I know.
So we obviously we'd want to boat up, but if we boat up and we're getting, taken along here by somebody that's got pocket aces or pocket kings, which is unlikely.
Right.
Then we're, you know, we're not doing well there, and the flush comes, we can't be happy with our flush either. So yeah. I don't know. I hate to waste 150 here, but I hate to fold for only 150. What a dilemma!
Yeah, I'm not afraid of the boat because I would think pocket aces or pocket kings would have bet more than 100 or 150 to protect their hands against the draws. So
against flush. That's a point. That's a good point.
So
I'd be hoping for a king or an eight here then.
Yeah, I think I'm hoping for an eight, really, because somebody could have ace king. So I think I'm hoping for an eight. And if a diamond does come, hopefully it's a queen of diamonds. And then that way you have like the second nuts and only one hand really beats us. So I'm going to call because it's just, you know, if the guy had bet 250 the street before, it might have called that too. So now I get to see an extra card for the same price. So I'm calling.
Price.
I'm calling.
Yeah, good point. All right. Well, that's exactly what happens. We all call. The next player calls as well too. So we haven't shaken anyone. Three of us going to the river. Pots 1200. And the river comes the seven of diamonds. So that's ace of diamonds, king of spades, eight of diamonds, three of spades, seven of diamonds. We hit our flush, but it's not the queen of diamonds that we're hoping for, Chris.
Well, you know what's really scary, too, is the other player. The other player is calling along, too. Mm-hmm. So what could the other player be calling with unless they could easily have a pair of kings and one of them is a diamond. And now they've got the flush draw, too. And then that's why they were sticking around. And now they've got the nuts and we've got the second nuts or third nuts or whatever. Could have easily been that. Or they could have had the king of diamonds, queen of diamonds in their hand. And they're calling along just like we are, hoping for the flush. So I'm not happy about the flush. I would much rather have hit the eight. But this flush, jack high, I mean, ugh, that's scary. I can't imagine calling much more than, like, I don't know. I can't even imagine what I'm going to call here if somebody bets out. But I'm not betting. I'll be happy to take the hand down, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Betting here is just traumatic, I think, with that player, like you said, that mystery player after us, not to mention the original raiser that probably has something, but you surely don't want to open the betting up to making the pot bigger here.
Yeah, no.
I think we check, and then we'll see what happens to the action here, and if it's small enough that we can, you know, trick, talk ourselves into betting it, or calling it, we will.
Yeah.
No. All right, so Aquaman checks. Our mystery player wake up now, Chris.
Oh, man.
That's 500 into this pot of 1200. The button calls, comes back to us.
You got to call. Yeah, I know you're doing the overcall here, but I mean, for 500, you're still going to have 3,000 if you lose the pot, and it's still just 2550. Oh, man.
2200 in the pot now. Isn't this sick?
Yeah, you got to call. You're 2200 in the pot. I mean, you're getting more than 4-1 on your money. Yeah, I have to call. Sad. You know that middle position players are going to wake up with a queen eye flush or something and just kill you.
Yeah, this is really weird because this is one of those calls that I can justify making even though I am almost sure that the other player has me beat. I'm not worried about the button so much now. I'm definitely worried about the mystery player. But you're right, it's 500 into a 2200 pot. You know, I love this at the table when people say, well, I know you have me beat, but I'm going to call. People love that.
I know.
Because why? You know, if you knew I would be, there's no reason to call. But
all right, I'm calling. You know, are you calling?
And the reason I'm calling is because I'm closing out the action. If there's another player behind me, I would be doing this.
That's a great point.
We can close it out. You know we're putting the 500 in, and you know, I'll have to shower afterwards probably. Yeah, but
that's a great point.
All right, so that's exactly what Aquaman does. He calls. The button turns over six of clubs, eight of clubs, ten of diamonds, king of clubs. So he had flopped top two, and like you said, we didn't want that king to come, obviously.
Yeah, ace king, yeah.
And that's kind of a crying call at this point, I think. I mean, two pair, that's flush on board and sad.
Man.
And again, that's a position where he still had to worry about us when he made the call.
Yep.
And all right, obviously we have our flush. And the other player, two of spades, eight of spades, seven of hearts, jack of spades.
Oh, my God, no flush. Two pairs, seven and eights.
And sevens. So obviously he improved on the river, but crazy.
Oh, my God, that's ballsy right there. That's representing, that's what that is, and hoping that your two pair are good. There's no way he thought two pair were good there. He was probably representing the flush, hoping everybody'd fold.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. I mean, think about what we just talked about. I mean, if we were either the button or Aquaman, we were scared to call this bet.
Oh, my God. That's insane.
So I can't fault the guy for taking a shot here. I mean, it does seem really weird now, but, you know, the way he was playing the hand, it screamed flush draw. The flush gets there.
Oh, my God.
It was almost a good curve and a bluff there, and he improved in case, you know, everybody else was on a draw. The only scary thing about his bet, though, is he had the guy that's been raising the entire time to act behind him.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't worry too much about Aquaman in that situation because he didn't bet out. But I don't know. Interesting bet. I mean, I'm not going to fault the guy, actually. But a good call for Aquaman. Wins the pot, $2,700. And I'm sure he went on to turn that into $6 gazillion.
And on top of that, $6 gazillion, he's going to have $6 gazillion and something else because we won something for Hand of the Week.
That's right, Aquaman. We're going to send you a $10 staking package from getastake.com. Enjoy that in your next ha tournament. And, well, we have a lot of Hands of the Week. Doesn't mean you should quit sending them in. Email them to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and you too can win valuable prizes.
We'll have a safe trip back. Looking forward to next week. I'm going to be interviewing AJ Benza next week. He's going to pour his heart out to us and let us know exactly what happened with High Stakes Poker. But another good show today. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.